Blog Talk Radio.
This is a program for all America.
Well, hi there, welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. Hope you're having a great week. Weather is gorgeous here in the Northeast. I know some folks are battling bad weather, but I hope you get some respite from that. Colorado, they had hail yesterday, I think. Wow. I'll tell you what, I played hooky for half a day yesterday, and then all hell broke loose. So, but it was worth it to see Lee Daniels' masterpiece, The Butler. The havoc it wreaked on my day, it was worth it. It was a beautiful movie. I don't use the word masterpiece lightly. This is a film for everyone to see. It's an American story. It's a story about fathers and sons, husbands and wives, about American history, the civil rights movement. A beautiful film with some phenomenal performances. Forest Whitaker, I think he's going to get another Oscar nomination and possibly another Best Actor Oscar. In fact, his first legitimate Best Actor Oscar. When I say that, I don't mean he didn't deserve an award for his role as Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland. I just think it was more of a supporting player role, actually. But he is phenomenal here. Oprah Winfrey? Oh, my goodness. I know she got a nomination but didn't win for Color Purple, and she was gorgeous in that movie. She is great here as the wife of the butler. It's loosely based on a true story about a man who was a butler through seven presidencies, from Dwight Eisenhower through Ronald Reagan, and the history that this country, that he viewed firsthand in that role, and just a phenomenal film. Well done. Great supporting players, too. Lenny Kravitz, Cuba Gooding Jr., Mariah Carey has a small part. Vanessa Redgrave has a small part. You have some interesting players taking on roles as presidents, like John Cusack playing a very disturbed, paranoid Nixon. Fine job there. Liv Shriver plays Lyndon Johnson. The Ronald Reagan one, Alan Rickman did Ronald Reagan. I thought the makeup was off. That was the only thing that I thought was strange. And Robin Williams, Dwight Eisenhower. You got to see this movie to check all these roles out. The one that's now kicking up controversy, no surprise, Jane Fonda back in the news. She's on film, I think, maybe 3 minutes, if that, as Nancy Reagan, and does a good job, by the way. But a lot of people are now kicking up dust about Jane Fonda again. Conservative Vietnam vet groups are threatening to boycott or planning a boycott of this movie because Jane Fonda is in the movie for 3 minutes. Have we not gotten over this yet? Apparently not. So I scanned the web, which is always a dangerous thing to do on occasion. And just when you thought it was safe to go back in the blogosphere, I came up with this posting from a site called conservativebite.com, taking a bite out of liberalism. You know which way they're going. So they're reminding people about the boycott Jane Fonda in the Butler promotion. Apparently some of this has actually worked because I understand in the original commercials, Jane Fonda was featured, her little clip as Nancy Reagan, to try to get people to go, and now they're pulling back on that for fear that it will detract people from going to the theaters. I don't think it'll play much. The movie opened wide as number one at the box office last weekend. I suspect it will do the same this weekend with all the good press it's getting, and it's just phenomenal, so it really deserves it. But people are up in arms, and if you go through these comments, I don't know, it's been a while since I used to peruse, when I worked at News Junkie Post, I had to peruse the blogosphere for the trolls and the crazies, and they're out there, and they're out in full force here. I don't know. They're boycotting her. I will never go see a movie with her in it. She's not patriotic. Oprah, by the way, is a racist, someone says. I mean, it's just crazy, these comments. And some of them I wouldn't read. I guess I could read them, I guess. On the Internet, anything goes, but I just don't choose to. Here's one that says, one of the best bumper stickers I've ever seen, Vietnam vets aren't Fonda Jane. Yeah, okay. That's an old one, I guess. But they're mad about the Hanoi Jane days. I believe she apologized for all of that, and not that she had to necessarily, but at some point we have to get beyond this. But there you go. Anyway, 347-857-4505 if you want to get into the free-flow pop culture convo. Movies are on our mind. We were going to have Jim Friedman on today. We may have him on Monday. He is the director of a phenomenal new film, a new documentary called Glickman, which highlights the life and times of the legendary sportscaster Marty Glickman, but he's busy. We'll see if we can get him on. I'll talk more about that movie a bit later. And we have a couple of filmmakers trying to make a documentary about Alice Guy Bechet. Do you know that name? I didn't either. She is, though, the first female director in Hollywood who kind of made a lot of movies, had her own studio for a while. Then she disappeared. They thought most of the movies had burned down and were lost in a fire, but apparently many of them are available, or they've been finding them. And they're putting together this interesting documentary about her, but they need help with funding. We'll talk more about that and get you into the mix, too. On the Friday edition, it's the Free Flow Popcorn Culture Convo at 347-857-4505. Let's check out the phones. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just want to say that I usually get the milk duds.
Hi, it's Mawa Mama. Stick with the duds, Sonny. My sister, Mawa Mama, who helped me play hooky yesterday, we both went to see The Butler together. So I know you liked it, right?
I loved it. It was very good. And James Bond has a very small part in it, so to boycott it, even if you feel, you know, some animosity towards her, is just, you know, ridiculous. You're missing out on a very good film.
She was only in for like 3 minutes at the most, right? She had one scene as Nancy Reagan. I believe that was it. It was not a
very small part. Very small part. Yes. Cameo.
Yeah, cameo. And that's
I think that's lines. I mean, it's ridiculous to boycott the whole film, which is very, you know, brilliantly acted, well directed, really, you know, shows a lot of our history over the span of years. It's too bad to boycott the film for that.
Right. Well, you know what? But you know what I'm suspicious of? I'm suspicious of this whole Jane Fonda boycott thing. As I mean, yes, they still have some hangover resentment towards her, and there may be some people who do, and that's they're entitled to it. That's fine. But I have a feeling some of these people that are doing this are also have another agenda because they want to undermine this film because it's a film that really does celebrate the civil rights movement. It celebrates African Americans, and there is a racist undertone in this country. I don't want to always play the race card. I'm not saying that all the time, but there's this right wing. They're always looking to undermine anything Obama has to do, a lot of times anything that Oprah, all of a sudden Oprah's a big racist according to these people too. I mean, it's
I don't understand that at all. Why would you call her a racist?
I do not know. You know, I don't know, because these people also call President Obama a racist. They believe it's like reverse racism, I guess. It's just a very upside down world in which these people function in, and so I'm very suspicious of it. I think it's tainted. Now, of course, they say it's a insult to have Jane Fonda play Nancy Reagan, since she stands for everything that Nancy Reagan didn't stand for, vice versa, kind of thing. And I don't know. The whole thing is kind of smells a little bit to me, but you know, people are entitled.
She's not playing herself. She's an actress, you know.
Exactly. Right. She's playing a role. So, you know, what's the big deal? But listen, they're entitled to they're entitled to do it. And then we live in a free country, and that's what makes it kind of, you know, frustrating but fun at the same time, because you never know what you're going to find when you peruse the interwaves, as I like to say. You know,
yeah,
they're crazy. They're out there. They're floating around. They're sailing in it. That's for sure. Big other movie news. I heard that Ben Affleck has signed on to be the new Batman. What do you think about that?
He's not my favorite, but we'll see. You know,
you have a favorite Batman? I didn't know Batman was a big thing for you.
No. I mean, he's not my favorite actor, Ben Affleck.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant he's not your favorite choice for that.
I'm not really big on the whole Batman franchise either, so,
right.
You know, to me.
So basically you're saying you don't
Batman
really care.
I don't care.
Is that what you're trying? Is that what you're trying to tell me? You don't really care?
I don't really care. But my husband will probably want to go see that Batman movie.
Oh, so in other words, you may actually see it then.
You never know. If we can get a babysitter.
Or he may go by himself. But it's funny because he's playing Batman, and he did already play Superman in a way, because he didn't play in the Superman movies, but he played Superman in a movie called Hollywoodland a few years ago. Did you remember that movie?
No.
He played George Reeves, who was the original Superman. He played him in a very dark role, because George Reeves was really an unhappy man. He got typecast in that role and really didn't like it. And the movie's really about whether he killed himself or was murdered. It's a fascinating movie. It's a small, it got a big release at the time, but I guess it kind of faded.
I'll have to check it out.
10 years ago, I guess now. It's called Hollywoodland. Yeah, it's an interesting movie. So he'll play the real Superman, or the man behind Superman, and play Bruce Wayne, Batman, in the movie. But, I understand it was either Ben Affleck or the Affleck duck that was up for the role. So so they went with Ben. But bum bum, you're not being a good foil here.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It was funny.
All right. What?
It was very funny. I was picturing the duck in the costume, you know.
Yeah, I can see that, right? I also have an interesting story for you that I know you're going to be interested in because we had talked about this before, nothing to do with the movies, but it's about instant karma. It'll come back and get you, believe me. Apparently the kids are ditching the Fitch. Have you heard about this? Abercrombie and Fitch. Remember that guy, that geeky CEO who came out a year ago or whatever
it was.
And said he only wanted pretty people to wear his clothes, wear his shirts? Well, apparently he's losing his shirt now. Because kids apparently aren't going. Their sales are way down. Kids are eschewing Abercrombie and Fitch for hipper places like Urban Outfitters. So he's getting his, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he deserves it. That's ridiculous.
He does. I was hoping that they were going to say that people aren't going there because of this thing, but apparently it's not just because of this. It's mostly because, I guess, they just don't like the clothes anymore. So.
Well, you know, everything goes in a cycle. I mean, I remember, you know, Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, used to be kind of matronly. You know, plaid shirts and things like that. I mean, it's just so funny that it became this hip place with shirtless, you know, ripped guys and everything. Because it, you know, I don't remember it being like that when we were kids. It was sort of like where our grandmother would go get a tweed skirt, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember it that well at all because we never went there. So, yeah, you're right. And then the Gap also started out being more industrial, then it became hipper. So you're right, things, they reinvent themselves. But unfortunately, he tried to reinvent himself as a really elitist place, I guess, and that kind of bombed. So good for people.
From a business person's point of view.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
Yes, you're branding something, and yes, you might want to be aspirational or inspirational or whatever, but... Don't you, bottom line, aren't you a business person? Don't you want to make money?
Yes, exactly.
Don't you want to sell to everybody?
Exactly. I mean, well, that's my point. You're like losing out on, because the point is you want to say if you buy these clothes, it will make you feel good. It will make you look better. You know, that goes into the aspirational. So you want everybody to wear it. You know, it's like designers who don't want to cater to overweight people or whatever. It's like, well, but then you're cutting out a big portion of the people that might buy your clothes. Not everybody can be a model. So you want to have your clothes on a variety of body types, I would think.
I agree. I think that would be very strange. I don't understand that. You know, I mean, people, you know, pigeonhole other people enough. You as a business person trying to sell good to them don't need to be doing that yourself, you know.
Exactly.
So I didn't understand his whole stance, and there was a backlash, as there should have been, because on many levels, I thought it was wrong.
Yeah, not a good thing. The other big story, of course, which is an inspirational story and one which I just love, is the story of Antoinette Tufts, this bookkeeper at the Atlanta school who prevented that mass school shooting or potential mass school shooting the other day by basically talking to the gunman. Wasn't that a great story?
Very brave.
Very brave, very inspirational.
I don't know how she kept her cool. Yeah.
You know, it had to be, I don't know, you know, it's hard. I know not everybody believes in God, but there's something out there because she said, she was on, I don't know if you saw this, there was an interview that she did with Anderson Cooper yesterday, and she said she wasn't even supposed to be there that day. First of all, she was going to take the day off. Secondly, she was filling in for somebody in the front office. She was supposed to go back to her desk. But she got her own phone call, which she said in the interview had devastating news for herself, but she didn't go into what it was, so I'm hoping everything's right with her life. So she was sitting there, I guess, gathering her thoughts during this phone call, or after this phone call, when he came in. So it was, and to have bad news in your own life and then to be able to react that way is just amazing to me. So I hope everything's okay with her. But she just had such grace, and this is a person, no training in psychology, no training in police work or negotiations, although she could have a future as a hostage negotiator, it looks like. But she just spoke from the heart, and she just connected with him on a personal way and got this troubled person to give himself up, essentially. He did go out, and before she got to talk to him, he was firing a couple of rounds, thank God nobody got hurt. But she brought him back in. She lured him back in to prevent this. So she put herself in harm's way. And she did it. I mean, it was just an amazing thing that she saved the lives, potentially, of all those kids, 800 kids in the school, I think, and a lot of teachers and staff people. And God bless her.
Amazing. Really Wonderful lady.
Mm-hmm.
Really wonderful. And she got a call, I guess, and she was thrilled to get a call from the White House. President Obama called her. And she was still humble in that sense. She just seems like a very nice person, a genuine person. And, you know, you can hear on the 911 call after it's over, she's like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out practically. I shouldn't say freaking out, but she said, oh, I can't believe what happened. You know,
right.
The 911 operator talked to her. They actually reunited. He reunited her with the 911 operator on the talk show. It was interesting to see. But really, that's an inspirational story. And also, of course, it's a shot in the arm or a shot against, no pun intended or maybe intended, against the NRA and their idea that everybody has to be armed, that you should arm people in schools as opposed to having people, you know, her instinct wasn't to pull out a gun. Her instinct was to talk to this person.
Mm-hmm.
And their idea is to have more people, school personnel, armed to the teeth as opposed to having less. I mean, I think more guns is not the answer, basically. It's less.
No,
guns.
I agree.
And,
I think that's
yeah.
that's a foolish way, and that's just the NRA trying to hang on to, you know, their job is to sell guns. You know, they work for the gun manufacturers. You know, they say they're for the gun owners, but really they're lobbying for the gun manufacturer.
Yeah, that's what they are.
You're
right.
It's ridiculous. We need gun control. We don't need more guns. You know,
and they feed into this. Yeah, but they feed into this paranoia that people have, and this thing about clinging to the Second Amendment. I always say people are clinging to the Second Amendment with such dear life that we're losing dear lives daily on America's streets. It's just outrageous, really. And I heard today that George Zimmerman just took a tour of a gun factory that manufactured the kind of gun that he used to kill Trayvon Martin, but they didn't reveal whether he bought a gun from them or he just took the tour.
That's great.
Yeah.
And what about that shooting in Oklahoma? You know,
oh, the kids...
The were aboard.
The board. Yeah, these kids killed this
Australian
tourist. Yeah, an Australian tourist. They just shot him, and they said they were bored. Well, they went back and looked over their social media because now everybody has, or most of us, have social media footprints. And on Twitter, one of the kids, or more, I'm not sure if it was all of them or one of them, had some really nasty racist tweets and things, angry tweets. But, you know, again, this idea of censoring people, it is a free country, people can say anything. I don't know if it was violent. Well, he did say, I think on Facebook, he said we're getting ready to kill or something like that.
This was not a racial killing.
No, it wasn't a racial killing, although there was some racial, was three kids, two were black, one was white, so I don't know that it was racially motivated, but there was some racial undertones to one of the teenagers' comments. Some people have talked about it in those terms, but I don't think it was. They're not being charged as a hate crime, so they're not saying it was targeted because he was white. I think they were just saying we're gonna pick the next person. It was like a random shooting of somebody. We're just bored, kind of shooting.
I'm just saying that. You know, my first question was, what was an Australian tourist doing in Oklahoma? Is there anything really to look at in Oklahoma? Well, I don't know. I haven't been there, but it doesn't seem like a big tourist attraction. It is very unfortunate. It's terrific.
I have no idea what he was doing there. But now Australia, there is some talk about them trying to boycott people from Australia to come to the U.S. as a tourist attraction because of all the gun violence, and people are worried.
Well,
in other countries.
You know, perhaps.
Well, apparently Australia has a history, I guess some years ago, I'm not sure how many years it was now, they had a mass school shooting and they banned all the guns. The same thing happened in England. I mean, the thing is, in those countries, they could do it because they don't have the Second Amendment to deal with. Here, they get such flack because of the stupid Second Amendment, which, again, maybe we should revisit it and rewrite it, because I believe that the people who wrote the Constitution thought this was a living document that should be revisited. I mean, there was language in there, there were things in there.
Well, that's what it's called, amendment. Amending means change. So
I know, but then you'd have to do it, but you'd have to, if you revisit it, you'd have to get another amendment to amend it, is what I'm saying, and they're, of course, going to cling to it. They don't want to. They want to interpret it the way they want to interpret it, which means they can have any kind of arms they want, and they want to carry them wherever they want. I mean, in North Carolina, they just passed a law that says you're allowed to take a gun now, a loaded gun, into a bar and a playground. What could possibly go wrong with those scenarios? I mean, why do you need a loaded gun in a bar where people are getting drunk? Number one, and why do you need a loaded gun on a playground? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. So, you know, and the idea
and
that people
you
don't
can go to church with a gun. What do you need a gun?
Oh, yeah. Well, they've had a couple of church shootings too. Exactly. It's an outrageous state of affairs, and very little has been done since Sandy Hook, although Connecticut and New York, there have been some states that have passed tougher laws than Colorado did in wake of the Aurora movie theater shooting. I'm not so sure about Arizona after the Gabby Giffords shooting. You think they would have passed stricter laws, but I'm not sure they have. So some states have stepped up a bit, but on the national level, no. You can't even get the background checks tightened, even though 90-plus percent of Americans, including most gun owners, want it. You know.
Right.
So, to me, that's great. It's just,
but I don't know how many of these mass shootings we have to endure and hopefully survive before it makes a difference. I mean, when Columbine happened, that was, what, you know, 13 years ago or so? I mean, it was, I don't know, how many years was it? But it's been a while. And
it was a long time,
we just, we don't learn from our mistakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of it is greed because, you know, it's protecting the manufacturers of these guns with the ruse that we are protecting our rights.
Our rights.
And our freedom.
So that's it.
You know,
that's
if, you're,
how they work
if you're not
up.
Doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about.
Right.
You know, if you want a gun and you want to go through, you know, then you should be able to take the time to go through the proper check so that you can have the gun so you can go hunting with, you know, your buddies or your friend or whatever. But you don't need a big arsenal with these huge magazines of ammunition to go hunt deer. You know, deer
exactly.
are not armed.
Exactly. Well, I don't, and I don't understand these states where you are allowed to, you know, pack heat just out of the grocery store, like Florida. I mean, I don't get it. I don't really. I mean, you know, these are other things. I mean, there's a lot of these laws. I mean, Stand Your Ground, I know, came under fire during the George Zimmerman trial, although it was never really asserted in the case. Because Florida, along with other states, including, I believe, Connecticut, have a standard ground law. But the packing heat, well, you know, having a concealed weapon, a legal concealed weapon carrier permit is in some states, and I don't believe we have that in New York and New Jersey, so we don't really think about that too much. But I just don't think it's a good idea. I don't know why people need to do it or feel they need to do it. And again, when Zimmerman's friends who were speaking on his behalf during that trial would say when they were posed the question, why did he have to have the gun with him to go to Target or wherever he was going, they would always say, because he had a legal right to carry it. Now, having a legal right to carry it doesn't mean you need to be carrying it. You know, why should you be doing it? I mean, what was about him that he felt he needed to have it? And what is it about our culture where people feel they need to have these guns with them? I mean, you know, it's sort of this, you're stirring the paranoid pot when everybody feels they have to have guns. Something to me is bound to happen if everybody feels paranoid. You know, paranoid enough to say I've got to carry a gun with me wherever I go. You know,
right,
I mean,
right.
Everybody's going
to
be
and
armed.
And certainly the
and
answer is not to have everybody have a gun. You know.
No, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. The answer is not is to have less people having guns, not more people having guns. But the knee-jerk reaction is for people to say, well, if everybody has one, I better have one too, you know, I guess. And that's unfortunate. And that's the, to me, a scary part of this whole thing. And I am disappointed in the Congress. And, of course, the Congress has the lowest rating possible. I mean, did you even know that by law, somehow back in 1970 or 71, they wrote a law that said they must take a mandatory 5-week vacation in August? Did you know that?
Well, that's a good law that they passed for themselves.
For themselves, exactly. I'd like to have one of those laws for me. I mean, what the heck? But, of course, nobody notices they're on vacation because they didn't do anything while they were there. So,
right.
So meanwhile, the sequestration goes on, and kids are getting cut out of Head Start and food stamps and all these other programs for the underprivileged. But they didn't put a freeze on their salaries, and they didn't put a freeze on their benefits, and they didn't put a freeze on their vacation. So it's ridiculous to me. So I don't know what we expect from Congress, and their approval rating is really low. But John Boehner is wearing it like a badge of honor because he says, you shouldn't judge us by what we pass, you should judge us by what we repeal. So he wants to be judged as someone who just says no and tries to repeal things like Obamacare. They're trying to repeal that again, and that's not going to happen. So they're just going to waste more time spinning their wheels while people in need have tougher times and have to make greater sacrifices. And to me, that's just...
But a lot of people vote against their best interests. You know, you'll find that there are some people who, maybe because of their aspirational, you know, lifestyles or whatever, feel like someday I will be in the tax bracket that will, you know, that I will benefit from the things that the Republican Party, you know,
stand for.
Stand for, So, I mean, I know lots of people who, you know, vote against their best interests, and I just don't understand it. Like, this is not the party that is helping you at this particular time. So I don't know why you're voting for him.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, because a lot of those people you'll find also listen to, like, Rush Limbaugh, who, by the way, is in that tax bracket, and he whips these people up into a frenzy on a daily basis. And if you listen to those kinds of people on Fright Wing Talk Radio or the Fright Wing blogs, and this is what you're exposed to, or Fox News, then you believe it. And whether it feeds on a paranoia.
Well, you're
it feeds
so stupid,
on an anger.
You don't realize that it's not going to help you. You know, it's going to hurt you. That you're just helping a very small percentage of the population.
Yeah, exactly. See, I don't mind. I can understand why people who are wealthy, and there are some people who are wealthy who vote against their own personal interests when they're voting for the greater good.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, I'll make a personal sacrifice because, you know what, I can't afford to pay a little bit more, so let me do it. And I think that's perfectly understandable. It doesn't make sense, though, to say, let me vote against something that would help me. Why people are against the Affordable Care Act, which they like to call Obamacare, I don't know, because it is going to benefit so many more people, and we'll see if the promise of it bringing down health care costs and health insurance costs are there. If it fulfills it or not, we'll find out, I guess, when it goes into effect. But they want to repeal it now, and I don't think that's going to happen, so they're wasting their time on something which clearly isn't going to happen. Are you still there? Because I hear some clicking noise.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. It's my phone, I think.
That's okay. Yeah, you're sort of in a tunnel. You're on a cell phone, which we always love here on the...
I'm sorry. It was the only way I could call
today. It's not your fault. No. Don't worry about it. It's fine. We deal. We manage. It's just, you know, the interesting sound effects. We try to keep the sound as pure as we can, but it's not always possible. It's not always possible. So getting back to the butler, you do recommend it, right? Because I posted a comment about the butler on my social media feeds, and I had somebody say, you know, I haven't seen a movie in years, but I'm dying to see this one, and I think it's worth the price of admission, even if you don't go to the bargain matinee. What do you agree? Disagree?
Yes, it was very good. It was touching.
Really,
it was historical. They had a lot of, interesting stars in it, making these small cameo appearances as presidents, first ladies.
Yeah.
So that was interesting too. The costume.
Do you know that he had a hard time getting this movie funded? I mean, Lee Daniels, who by the way is no slouch. I mean, he's not exactly a first time director. This is the man who was nominated for best director for Precious. You know, he directed Monsters Ball, and he had trouble getting funding because the studio exec said, you know, it's just a black movie, and we were worried about the audience size. Well, it's not just a black movie. It's a movie that everybody should see. And by the way, thank you very much. It opened as to number one last weekend, and I think it will probably do the same because it's so fine and it's getting such good press. And
I thought it was very
good.
I don't think it's a black movie. I think it's an American movie. It's about our history.
Exactly. It's an American movie.
You know, it's about, you know, a fight for freedom and just also just showing the changes over, you know, multiple decades.
It's really a beautiful movie. And it was dedicated to, we should say, the Freedom Riders, the young men and women, and different ages, but mostly young people, you know, black and white, who fought and sacrificed their own safety, their own freedom, and sometimes their lives for this cause. And I think that was a very honorable thing. And I think in one of the showings, somebody who was a Freedom Rider went up to the director and the writer and said, Danny Strong, we should say, was the screenwriter, who wrote this based on an article that was written about the butler. It was based on a true story, and they fictionalized it here and there. And he certainly expanded on it and dramatized it. But he said somebody came up and said, thank you for thanking us. Nobody ever did. So it's nice when people who were, you know, they're unsung heroes. We're going to do a little celebration, a little tribute to Martin Luther King and the March on Washington, which marks its 50th anniversary next week, a little bit later. And this is a timely thing for this movie to come out this time, and I'm sure there was no coincidence. But, you know, you talk about Martin Luther King, you talk about all the leaders, but there are a lot of people, the foot soldiers, the people on the ground who are working really hard, who don't get the attention they deserve. So it's a beautiful movie.
Right.
I recommend it. Please, you know, you deserve it. Go see it. Forget the Jane Fonda boycott. It's crazy. Hey, speaking of funding, though, we're going to switch gears in a couple of minutes and talk with a pair of filmmakers who are trying to make a movie about this woman, Alice Guy Blaschet. Have you ever heard of her?
No, not until you mentioned her.
She is a first woman director in Hollywood, and nobody knows who she is, but she made a bunch of movies. A lot of them were lost. These people stumbled upon this story and a couple of her movies and have been amassing what movies they could find about her life and her movies, and they're trying to put together a documentary about it, and, of course, that takes some funding. So we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes and how people can get involved with the Kickstarter campaign. Hey, thanks for stopping by, Mawa Mama. Always a pleasure talking with you. Have a great weekend.
You too, honey. Take care.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Hey, it is the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Give us a call, 347-857-4505, to get into the mix. Back at the Andy Beth Arkley Show here on VTR. We're going back to Hollywood oh so many years ago. For the first female director in Hollywood who no one knows about, Alice Guy Blaché, and talking to a couple of filmmakers who want to change that. They want people to know who this woman is and all the work that she did that contributed to the rich history of film. Welcome Pamela Green and Yarek Van Sloosh to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Hi there.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for coming by. This is a fascinating project. Give us a little thumbnail about how you guys stumbled upon Alice, where you found her, because most people never heard of her, including people who were entrenched in the film business.
Basically, I clicked on a channel. Barbra Streisand had a special called Real Models about pioneering women in cinema. Alice was there, and I was hooked. Couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And to find out more.
So Barbra Streisand knew about her before you did. That's interesting. Or before anybody
yes.
else did, it seems. That's interesting.
It was a show with Barbra Streisand, Shirley MacLaine, Hilary Swank, Susan Sarandon, and Minnie Driver. It was called Real Model.
Oh, wow. So they talked about her, or they showed footage? What was the tribute to her about?
It was about pioneering women, and it featured Alice Guy Blaché, Mary Pickford, Frances Marion, Lois Weber, and some others. But Alice, of course, stuck out because of all that she had accomplished.
Wow. So you saw that and you said, well, and you didn't know who she was before, and you just said, I'm fascinated, let me go look into it. And it became kind of a detective story. You guys have been working on this for a couple of years now. You hunted down her films, which apparently it looks like people thought they were all lost in a fire. She started a movie studio in New Jersey, called Solax, and I guess there was a fire. Was there a fire at the studio or a fire where the movies were held? And they thought they were lost, but apparently that's not true. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Basically, she made Fort Lee, New Jersey, is the beginning of, you know, before Hollywood. But she was starting already at Beaumont, which is a studio still in existence today. She saw the Lumiere screening before it even became Beaumont. It was a photography studio. She had permission if she could make a film. And, you know, nobody took it seriously. She's one of the first to do a narrative. And then she became the head of production of Gaumont, came to the U.S. actually, retired somewhat with her husband to break the sound into the U.S. She's one of the first to sync sound to film. This is before the jazz singer. Edison kind of got in the way. That didn't work out. So she's like, well, I don't believe in waste. And she got back up and she started Solex. And she made 1,000 films. They were lost. And she was looking for them. She only found 3 before she passed away. We personally have not found any films. We've been seeing them along the way. And as they're getting discovered, we've been contacting people to be able to see them so we can feature them in the film. We're in hopes to find, you know, more of her films. There's 150 that were found, but we think there's more out there for sure.
And yes,
so where were they? You said they were lost. Were they in that fire? Is that where they thought they? She thought she had lost all of them, or where did she think they were lost from?
Well, they were lost where nobody was cataloging them. There were private collectors that found them along the way. Like 9 months ago, there was one that was found in a barn in New Hampshire. There's another one that was mislabeled in the Library of Congress. But, you know, you have to understand back then, Library of Congress, these places, they didn't have these films. They were dispersed all over the world because the films were going to movie theaters, or they would go along with the camera as a commercial, if you will, how to use the camera. It wasn't really... It was the beginning of something that was more of a novelty and then later turned into the business.
Right, wow. Yes, very interesting. And you call the movie Be Natural, The Untold Story of Alice Guy Lesheva. Be Natural comes from her instructions to her actors, right? Talk a little bit about that, Yarik.
Yes, she believed that her actors needed to act in a natural way as opposed to the sort of exaggerated gestures of the cinema beginning of silent film. And she had a sign in her studio that read, "Be natural."
So she was like a pioneer on a lot of levels. Yeah, she was a pioneer for filmmaking and for acting technique, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. She also directed the first film known with an all-African-American cast.
In contemporary clothes, and one of the first people to be doing the beginnings of the studio system, creating different roles and dividing it up and delegating, because she couldn't do it all.
Wow. So she started in Paris, and she had a 20-year long career, which is pretty long. It's longer than most filmmakers of the time.
And today.
Yeah, well, and talk a little bit about the travails of contemporary filmmakers, because you two are fairly established out in Hollywood. You have a lot of your work. You do special effects, or sequences. You do sequences for different films.
We do opening credits for films, and sometimes sequences within the films to help in storytelling when sometimes you can't turn back the camera back on, and we can recreate the moments that you feel. But we're not successful filmmakers yet. I mean, this is purely on passion, and we're post-production people, really.
That's why we're on Kickstarter with Be Natural.
That's right. Well, we're going to talk about that. But I would say that you people have seen some of your work in pretty high-profile films, like 42. That's the most recent one, I guess. Bourne Supremacy, a whole bunch of films. Some of your work is in there as post-production sequences. But let's talk about the Kickstarter campaign, because this is a way that a lot of people go to. Film is so expensive. We've talked to other filmmakers in the past. It's one of the most expensive endeavors. Anybody can do a lot of things themselves and try to, you know, write a book. I'm a writer, so you can write a book. But to get something financed, like a film, it's a lot of money to just get it going and get it off the ground. So you already have some impressive trailers on your Kickstarter page. I will say that. So clearly you're talented. But why is it? What's the holdup? The money is the holdup, and how much money do you need? And why is it so expensive?
Well, it's expensive because if you were just be dealing with a contemporary issue, you can pick up the camera and go out there and do it in a little bit of a, you know, cheaper fashion. The problem with Alice is that she's scattered all over the world. Her films are in 28 archives in different formats. Some are still on nitrate that have been discovered that need to be preserved. She's got papers, you know, everywhere. And it's a little bit of an international story that involves restoration and licensing, and let's not forget, you know, putting together the editorial and our graphic approach to take you back in time so you understand what it would have been like if you were there.
Yeah. So you're trying to raise, it's a pretty big one, you're trying to raise 200 grand, is that right? And you're doing pretty well, I think. Let me see what you're up to now. You're up to, well,
no,
you've got a ways to go.
You
need more, yes. You're up to 132,433 with only 3 days to go. And unfortunately, because we've talked about Kickstarter before, it's an all-or-nothing proposition, so you got to make that 200 or you're not getting anything, right?
We absolutely get zero, and, you know, we've never tweeted so much in our life. I think we're graduating Twitter University, and, you know, it's a struggle. You know, people don't understand it, you know. Nothing is handed to us. The people that are in the documentary, we've either worked with or literally begged for 6 months at a time to, you know, be involved.
And we have amazing backers. I must say that, though, the backers that have joined us, I think once they look at the trailer, which is on Kickstarter, they become part of the team. They understand why this story needs to be told, and they're inspired. You know, there's so much crap out there right now. Constantly
right.
movies about the same superheroes over and over again being regurgitated. And this is real content. This is a real story, and it needs to be told.
Yes, it's a really inspiring story. And you do have some big names affiliated with it. You have Robert Redford involved. I think Jodie Foster has narrated the trailer. So there are high-toned people, you know, high-powered people involved. But it's still hard to get financed.
It's all on passion. I mean, we give them kudos. I mean, Robert Redford, he stood behind Alice. He's the first person. And then Jodie, and then Catherine Hardwick and all these people. But we've worked with Catherine Hardwick, for example, for 10 years. We've worked on most of her movies. So, you know, it's relationship and favors and the passion that this woman was so determined that she didn't see the obstacle. She only saw the possibilities. And that's a lesson. That's the
right.
underlining in this whole story, that you can do whatever you set your mind to if you want to do it and you visualize it. You have to believe. You got to go out there and do it. And that's what she did.
That's what she did, and that's what you're trying to do to immortalize her and get more people to know who she is. The movie is called Be Natural, The Untold Story of Alice Guy Blaché. The best thing to do for folks, go to Kickstarter and put in the movie Be Natural, and then your page will come up. Is that right?
Yes, and every dollar counts. I mean, people, you know, they might look at it and, you know, say, oh, my God, it's so much. But you know what? Every single dollar counts. That's how we have 2,000 backers. It doesn't matter what you do. As far as your donation, it's who you share it with. Sharing is caring.
Yeah. Right. Get the word out. Tweet it to everybody. Put it on Facebook. Email it to your friends. Get people involved. Because you've gone up considerably, I think. The first time that you guys contacted me and I looked at it, you had very little money. Now you're moving up. But you still need a chunk of change, and you have a few days to get it. So hopefully this weekend we can get it, you know, get the engine moving, so to speak, and get you some more capital. Because it is a fascinating story, and you've already done a very professional job. If you look at those trailers, I will post it again. I've been posting it. I will post it again on Facebook and Twitter. Take a look at those trailers, because you clearly know your stuff, and it's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating woman that nobody knows about. And listen, we're all about story here, this show. It's about stories and telling compelling stories, and this is definitely a compelling story that needs to be told. I wish you success with it. You got perseverance, you got the passion, and I think you're going to do it, but we got to put you over the top this weekend, okay? So go to Kickstarter and look up Be Natural. Does it just Be Natural, or you have to put the whole title in?
They should go to Kickstarter and just type in Be Natural, but the important thing besides looking at the trailers on the page is to click on the updates. Because those are gems of our findings and interesting parts along the way that will blow your mind.
Okay, great. Well, keep going. Do you have a deadline in mind, or you're just going to wait and see how much money you can get?
Oh,
what's your
you
wish
know
list
what?
For...
We, of course, it takes a lot to tell Alice's story because she did so much. So we really hope we reach our goal. I mean, if anything happens after that, hallelujah. Because Alice deserves it, and future Alices deserve it. Future Alexes deserve it. We need this person cemented in history and into the future as an example that you can do whatever you want in your life if you set your mind to it and you visualize.
What is your hope that you're going to get this made by? I mean, if you do get the money you need, what do you think you're going to be able to finish it by?
We'll be able to get a rough cut. Hopefully, you know, for the Cannes Film Festival, that would be a perfect place for Alice, especially because she started her career in France. So obviously the more we can get, the better, because it helps with, you know, color correction, music, licensing. You know, we don't create these prices, and it's very expensive.
Right.
Fortunately.
So in other words, you get, if you make the 200 grand, you can also make more than 200 grand, right? It's just the cutoff date is in 3 days. That's it. When it's over, it's over.
Yeah,
but if
you
make more than 200,
we have until Monday at midnight. But it shouldn't stop anyone who's listening to go and donate now. Every dollar and sharing. The tweeting,
yes.
The Facebook, the Vine, the Instagram, all of these things really help get the word out.
And you're already getting an amazing story in return, because if you look at the trailer and the updates, you'll see what we mean.
Yes. I'm hooked. I think it's a fascinating story. I wish you the best. I'm going to keep pushing it for you, and I hope you come back and see us when you get the movie made, because I know you're going to do it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Really, really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome, Pamela Green and Yarick Van Sloosh. Thank you for joining us. It is The Natural, The Untold Story of Alice Guy Blaché. Find out more about it at Kickstarter. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hey, this is the end of the Darkly Show. Give us a call, 347-857-4505. We'll celebrate St. March on Washington.
The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream was given on August 28, 1963. The words of Reverend King echoed long after his death in 68. This memorable day was in Washington, D.C., a hot afternoon, when he spoke before a crowd of 200,000 overlooking the reflecting pool from the Lincoln Memorial.
Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, yes, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Yes. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. Yes. I have a dream, mm-hmm, that one day, yes, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yes. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my...
Would you like to sing We Shall Overcome? Thank you.
recognize that there are ties between us, all men and women living on the earth. Ties of hope and love, sister and brotherhood. That we are bound together in our desire to see the world become a place in which our children can grow free and strong. We are bound together by the task that stands before us and the road that lies ahead. We are bound and we are bound.
There is a feeling like the clenching of a fist. There is a hunger in the center of the chest. There is a passage through the darkness and the mist. And though the body sleeps, the heart will never rest.
Blowing in the wind.
pretend that he just doesn't see. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? How many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Peter Paul and Mary wrapping up our salute to the famed March on Washington 50 years ago next Wednesday, August 28th, and Blowing in the Wind, the song they sang, the Bob Dylan classic, on that day. Wow, what a day it was. And what a day it'll be tomorrow when they apparently recreate that march with over 100,000 people expected. They expected a lot of people last time, and it was 200,000 people that showed. We also heard from Beauty from James Taylor and Shed a Little Light, and, of course, Joan Baez, We Shall Overcome, and a clip from the I Have a Dream speech from Martin Luther King. A little difficulty there, Trudy, but it's okay. Trudy at TCS working hard today. Aurora apparently has the day off, but that's okay, Trudy. We're doing our best we can. Little glitches in the system. We'll get through it. Hey, it is the Amy Beth Berkley Show. A few minutes left to get into the mix at 347-857-4505. If you have a compelling story to tell, we certainly want to hear about it over at the website. We're taking a vacation after next Monday's show, but we'll be back September 9th with a great lineup of interesting, compelling writers and artists and social crusaders and hot topics in the news. And if you've got one that you'd like to talk about, tell us, amybetharkowee.com. Click on the contact icon. Always looking for writers and theater folks, filmmakers, musicians, social crusaders, as well as media mavens. You know who you are, people who like to dish the dirt, TV, movies, hot topics in the news for our Coffee Clatch editions. Starting September 9th, we go live every Monday and Friday at noon. You can, of course, always catch the show on demand at the website, the Blog Talk Radio site. Click on the Amy Beth Arkowee Show. Follow us there. Follow us on Twitter at AB Writes, and you'll be in business. Also at the website, you can join me if you have any creativity coaching questions. Be on the lookout for upcoming writers' workshops and appearances, and figure out how you can get my book. Easy as pie. You just click on the icon. You get the latest Eliza Gordon mystery, Dead Silent, now available from Cozy Cat Press in paperback, or you can download it this weekend for your Kindle. Perfect portable beach read, I am told. People love it. Some people love it anyway. I guess there's some people who don't. That's okay, too. I love the feedback. I guess readers, and especially enjoy it when you enjoy it. So that's what we're doing. Monday we have a very special show before vacation. Be warned, who's afraid of James Arthur Ray? Yeah, the self-anointed self-help guru scamster is out of prison after serving less than 3 years for the negligent homicide deaths of three of his participants. Remember this story back in 2009, the Sedona, Arizona sweat lodge ceremony? Three people died, Kirby Brown, James Shore, and Liz Newman. Lots of other people were injured. It was a disaster that could have been avoided had Ray not had a lethal cocktail of hubris, steroids, and just oblivion. This man is pretty dangerous, and he is out of prison. So we're going to talk with Ginny and George Brown. They are the parents of Kirby Brown, who was, by all accounts, a lovely, vivacious woman, an artist, an entrepreneur, someone who was always seeking self-improvement to improve herself and others and the world around her. And she perished in that ceremony along with the two other folks. And these parents, devastated by the loss of their daughter, have made it their mission to help other people who are looking for spiritual growth and personal development to have a clearinghouse of sorts. SeekSafely.org is their organization, to go to a website where people can look up these practitioners of so-called self-help and self-improvement and find out their credentials, find out what they're doing, what their practices are, what their ratings are, if they've taken a pledge that they have devised for self-practice, safe practices. We'll talk more about their mission, Kirby Brown, and how they feel about James Arthur Ray out on the streets. What about you? We want you in the mix as well. You can always tweet in advance at AB Writes, or you can find me on Facebook, and you can, of course, give us a call live when the show is on. So that's what we're doing on Monday. And we'll have a little vacation set thrown in, too. We might also talk with Jim Friedman. He is the director of Glickman, a fabulous documentary I just saw, which will premiere on HBO this Monday. It has been at a variety of film festivals and art houses so far. I'm sure if you don't get HBO, it will be in DVD in short order. See this movie. It is a movie about a life well-lived, well-done. Marty Glickman, I didn't know much about him. I've heard the name. He was a sportscaster for many years in the New York City area and on the national level as well. A legend, really. He did the Giants games on radio. He did the NBA on radio and also for a while on TV and then was booted off. He was really the first person to broker the deal with NBC to carry the NBA. And then he got booted off. Maybe there was some anti-Semitism. He was also an athlete before this. I didn't realize this, that he had been, they called him the Flatbush Flash. He was a football and track star in high school and later at Syracuse University and was on the 1936 track team for the Olympics but didn't get to run because of Hitler. And there was all these weird things going on with one of the contractors who was also on the Olympic Committee team. And maybe they kicked off the two Jewish guys. There were only two Jews on the team and had other people run the relay. So he never got to run. But didn't let him deter me. Went on to have an undefeated Syracuse football season, a bright life, and it was just an interesting story. And he was a guy who paid it forward. He just had so much joy for his work and his life that he would help a lot of other people. A lot of sportscasters attribute him as their mentor, Bob Costas, Len Berman, Marv Albert, the list goes on and on. So it's a fascinating film, a good life. Jim Friedman, by the way, as a young kid, his brother worked at the radio station, and he got a chance to be Marty's producer of sorts in his senior year. So he knew Marty, and I would be fascinated to talk to him. So maybe we will on Monday. We'll see. Either way, watch the movie. It's a good one. It sure is. Hope you have your great weekend. It's certainly a good weekend, well, certainly around here to go outside because it's gorgeous. I don't know where you are. But also try to sneak in a movie because there's some good ones out there, Fruitvale Station, Blue Jasmine, and, of course, The Butler. I'm recommending it for your Saturday night at the movies. Check it out. And come back and see us whenever you do, wherever you go. Have a great weekend. Drive safe. Play nice. Dream big. We'll talk Monday on the Amy Beth Arkwee Show. Thank you, Trudy. Have a good day off, Aurora. And thank you, ML at TCS Headquarters. We'll talk Monday.
I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show. Everybody in the little neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
When you're hugging with your baby, let's grow in the balcony. Well, there's Technicolor and the CinemaScope, a cast out of Hollywood, and the popcorn from the candy stand makes it all seem quite as good. There's always lots of pretty girls with figures they don't try to hide. Can compare to the girl sitting by my side.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
When you're hugging with your baby, let's grow in the balcony.
machine.